for you. Reverend Dr. Walter Kepler from the Division of Welfare Services of the Lutheran Council of the United States Department of Clinical Education. Pastor Kepler has been very gracious in correspondence with him in the early months of my tenure here at the seminary, and has made a trip to New York City to be with us today and to speak about the clinical pastoral education and the opportunities it provides for students and institutions around that country. Ray reminded of our Lord's ministry to the man sick of the palsy in Matthew 9, where the Lord had ministry to both the spiritual and physical needs of that individual. The burden of the miracle, of course, is to always glorify our Lord and Savior as the Son of God and Son of Man. But there we see our Lord ministering to the old man. And it is in that context that I expect clinical pastoral education is a very viable training for seminarians who are dedicated to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ to mankind in our modern world, but also to take cognizance of the whole nature of man as we have been blessed to know that nature of man in modern sciences. Therefore, I think we're privileged today to have Dr. Bethel with us and to expose us to opportunities to learn from the scientific disciplines as we study theology and how we may profitably minister to our fellow man. So, Dr. Bethel will turn this small assembly, but interested assembly, over to you this morning.
Okay, thank you. Seems to me that we could most promptly use this time. If you will feel free to interrupt me at any point, I am hoping to sell PPE because I think it can be a very vital part of popular education. On the other hand, I hope that if you feel like selling in the contention and I say that nothing will hinder you if you speak right up. As Professor Warnick said, I'm in Lutheran Council's Department of Institutional Chaplaincy and Clinical Pastoral Education. And the reason why I'm here today is to speak with you about then clinical pastoral education. We try to involve ourselves with 12 Lutheran seminaries around the country as a resource person for CPE. Lutheran Council is a service organization for three of the bodies, ALC, LCA, and Missouri Synod, in different sorts of work. And one of the areas is clinical pastoral education. I don't want to spend too much time on history of what CPE is because I find that more and more people rather look ahead than back. On the other hand, a few sentences might be helpful. CPE is not new. Its 50th anniversary is being observed this year. And it started really in the Boston area. And there are two or three different facets that almost began, if not simultaneously, within a very close proximity of time, one to the other. In Worcester State Hospital, where there were no chaplains many years ago, there were, however, clergy who came into the hospital primarily to have services on Sunday afternoons for the patients. And the superintendent of the hospital, a very progressive person, was rather appalled because very often these clergy would preach the precise sermons that they preached to their congregations in the morning, and sometimes these were fitting, but sometimes they were not fitting at all for mentally ill patients. And so he said, somehow we have to give these clergy a better idea of how to deal with mental illness. At the same time, a Harvard physician, Dr. Cabot, who was also very interested in the work of pastors, at several Boston hospitals noted that some of the clergy with whom he came into contact, at least, could himself have some training that would aid them in visiting their sick parishioners. And then the third thing I'm talking about is the fact that a group of ministers of various denominations felt that when they got out into the actual ministry, that they had not been prepared as well as they might to do the actual healing, visiting the sick, counseling people, which was an important part of their life. They felt that simply hearing lectures and other materials in seminaries weren't giving them all that they needed. And so out of these three facets came something that today we call clinical pastoral education, and formerly was called clinical pastoral training. Now, it seems today then as part of theological education as the title implies. And really what CPE is this. It's an opportunity for a seminarian or a pastor to go into a clinical setting under the supervision of a highly trained and skilled chaplain supervisor who is usually the chaplain in the institution, to spend a minimum of a quarter, which usually now is not 12 weeks, but 11 weeks, full time, 5 days a week, in a group setting, dealing with patients or inmates, increasing his skills so that he can then, when he actually is in the parish ministry, have from the clinical background, more of an aptitude, hopefully, for healing people.
Well, that's a good question. I think you pointed to the answer already, but you might elucidate it a little further. Why the difference between clinical pastoral training and then education?
Yeah.
It was hard to ask that before you began, but you pointed to a little bit. You can make that a little clear.
There's been a lot of discussion even when the terminology was changed. And I guess the main reason is that this is seen as part of the theological education, particularly of seminaries, but seminaries are also then of clergy who take this as part often of a continuing education program in a little different form, which I'll get to. That really doesn't probably answer your question completely, but maybe as I go along, hopefully, it'll get asked more, and if not, hit me again.
I don't think you're saying more, but in terms of the practical learning by doing, education, which is a broader concept.
Yeah.
I wonder to what extent that played in the
change. It is a learning by doing concept. And I remember some 10 years ago being part of a panel that was arguing whether it should be called CPE or CPT, and I was taking the training, and it is surely not at all something that is only one or the other. I think you could use either term, but actually the term that is now used is clinical pastoral education. But it is purely training and visiting sick and counseling and doing that kind of practical work that the pastor does. There are about 400 CPE centers around the country with about 650 supervisors and around 160 major Lutherans. Lutherans are highly invested in this because possibly more than any other denomination, we have in the past invested ourselves heavily in money and manpower in visiting the sick. I don't think it's salvationistic to say that there is no denomination now, for instance, that puts as much money into the support of institutional chaplaincy programs as the Lutherans. And way back, this was the case. For instance, this is the 75th anniversary of institutional chaplaincy in the Missouri Synod. Now, I'm getting off of CPE for a moment. In St. Louis, Milwaukee, and Fort Wayne years ago, they had pastors who were called city missionaries and who were supported by the local churches working primarily in city hospitals. They did not especially visit Lutherans. Lutherans were generally, this is my own pastor, but they saw themselves as bringing the gospel to people, some of whom had been Lutherans, many of whom were unchurched, bringing the gospel to men, women, and children at a time when they might sometimes at least more readily even accept it. Often when a person is ill and might be facing possibly death or serious surgery or other trauma, he might be more open to the verity than he might be if all is well. And so the history goes back. Now, from those three people, 75 years ago, there are about 170 LCMS pastors full-time now in assistant pastors. So this has been an important part of our heritage. Oh, that's a digression. The Peace Day response of CPE is visiting patients under supervision. And the whole focus during the program is to evaluate how the seminarian or pastor does with the patient. Now, I say patient. My own background is mental hospital, where I spent 12 years as a chaplain in a large New York State mental hospital and many of those years as a CPE supervisor there. But CPE programs also are run in general hospitals, in penal institutions, in counseling centers, in geriatric institutions, which, by the way, is probably a growing edge for chaplaincy work, with more and more people living longer and longer, and in many more cases not being able to be at home during the last year. Some of it simply because they're too ill, but you know, cities especially, people living in smaller houses and apartments, it's harder to keep all folks around than was the case years ago when more people lived in country than in small towns. Also in institutions for the mentally retarded, you find CPE, and then a growing area which I think is important and vital, but which actually hasn't latched on quite as well as it might, is CPE in parish, in parishes. And to me, that's a real natural. And the relatively few number of seminarians who have this experience have found out that it's really something they appreciate. And I can tell you why it hasn't caught on later on. It's really interesting. 85% of everybody who takes CPE takes one unit, one quarter, as preparation for parish ministry. If any of you are thinking in terms of institutional chaplaincy as a goal later on in life, you will need to be thinking of 1 to 2 years of this sort of education. And you can very often get this in centers that offer stipend for a year's internship at a time. I think running between $7,000 and $9,000 a year. But what I'm talking about primarily, I think, to you, is the sort of CPE that might interest you for the parish in the future. Now, I said a moment ago that the essential ingredient in CPE then is visiting patients under supervision. A student in CPE is assigned to a ward or area of the hospital. And in effect, he is the chaplain in that section of the hospital. And he may rotate through different parts of the hospital in order to get exposure to different kinds of patients. This is varies from program to program. But the patients will see you then as chaplain. CPE is a group experience, as I said. There has to be at least 3, and usually not more than 7, because one supervisor spends a great deal of time with the group, and it is generally thought that if you get many more than 7 in the group, that this group process doesn't work out too well. And of course, if you have less than 3, it's not a group. Probably more time is spent, not probably, but more time is spent visiting patients than in any other thing during the quarter that you are in CPE. Now, you write verbatim reports of these visits. You doing any of that around here, Len? Do you know any of that verbatim?
Probably not.
probably you do. In other words, you try to capture as well as you can what you and what the patient said. This seems like a formidable and totally impossible task when you first are confronted with it, but you find that it isn't that difficult. There are little ways of recall without taking notes when you're visiting people, so that you can really get the essence of your conversation without too much trouble. A chaplain supervisor, and I told you that these are highly trained people who have had usually 2 years of CPE plus other kinds of training. A chaplain supervisor is often equally interested in feelings that you pick up and that you have during the course of an interview as he is in what you said and what the patient said. For instance, if I feel extremely comfortable with a certain patient, or if I'm very uneasy, or if I want to get in there in and out as quickly as I can, if I sense a patient, for instance, is angry or any other feeling they have, or really helpful, really pleased by what I'm saying, to try to pick and sort out not only what I say and how I am doing as a pastor to that person, but also to try to get in touch with the way I feel during the interview and the way the person feels. These are crucial elements that are discussed usually on the basis of the verbatim with the supervisor alone and usually with the supervisor and the group in what we call verbatim seminars. In some centers, the students can take their interviews, and this is a way of looking at what happened. And also, videotapes are used in some centers so that you can actually see yourself in action. I'm not telling you anything new, I know, when I say that the way I am non-verbally and the person who I am visiting non-verbally often is of tremendous importance in terms of what went on. I don't know how I come across to you, but as I look at you, I think I see certain things in the way you're sitting there and the expression on your face. This can be a very important thing. Now, other things that happen in the CPE program are lectures that students attend. If you're in a general hospital, for instance, there will be doctors and social workers and nurses and other people giving you material so that your body of knowledge will be increased so that you know more about visiting the sick. If you're in a state hospital, staff would deal with neuroses and psychoses and other areas that you as a pastor, the professional person, should have some awareness of. The supervisor will probably lead seminars on visiting the dying, preoperative, postoperative visits, visiting in the intensive care unit, visiting mothers who have had babies, these sorts of things that you often have some guidance in. There will be books to read and usually book reports to give. If it's a institution where there are services, you will undoubtedly preach a sermon, and there will be sermon seminars following the preaching of the sermon. Often again using videotape if that equipment is there. There are differences from program to program, but I think I have just pretty accurately outlined the essential ingredients of what goes on in a CPE program. Now, you will find that you are functioning on various levels in CPE. An important ingredient is increasing your skills so that you can more effectively be a pastor to people when you leave seminary. However, there's another thing that will happen that most people don't even realize at all. You have to, in order to get into a CPE program, you have to have an admissions interview by a CPE supervisor, which is part of the process, the whole CPE process. And I do these quite regularly. And 95% of the people through the seminary and tell me that they're going into CTE because they want to increase their skills as a pastor, as a future pastor. And this is legitimate and a very important part of CTE. But what they don't realize is that another very helpful thing occurs, and that is you get the opportunity to find out how you are, how you come across to people, what your strengths are, what areas there are in you that you might want to work on. I think it's true that very often I think that I come across to you in a certain way, but it really may not be that way at all. I might totally misperceive it. Now, CTE offers the possibility of getting a real good reading on how others see me, as well as improving my skills. And that's so because of this reason. When you're with 3 to 7 people, 5 days a week, 8-9 hours a day, for 11 weeks or so, under skill leadership, very often an atmosphere of trust and openness and willingness to expose oneself develops, so that you might be in a position where you can say things that perhaps you would be more cautious about saying in other settings. This doesn't always happen. I've had programs where this hardly got underway, and others where in the second or third week it was starting. Varies from program to program. But this is an added sort of a benefit that may happen in CTE. And so you have different sorts of seminars. Some that discuss verbatim, some that may deal with the sermon retreat, some that may deal with the book report, some that may deal with the topic that has been designed, for instance, and some that will be free floating seminars in which anything that is on your mind can be brought up. And different supervisors do this differently, some structuring these at greater intervals and others allowing these to happen in a more spontaneous way.
Could you say then, in the process of learning that others think of you and how you come across, you're learning to know yourself better, and your own self image then becomes more positive?
Quite.
More confident and trust yourself.
I would think so. Many people, for instance, tend to depreciate, downplay their skills and abilities. This is true of feminists. This is a general truism of many, many feminists. They have a lot more going for them, in other words, than they themselves often admit. And if in the course of the CTE program, it can be shown that this is the case and that they really are performing on a much higher level than they are seeing themselves, well, this obviously is going to improve their ministry they learn. In the same way, there are people who have some things that if they don't really begin to deal with, they may be impediments to their ministry. And this gives them an opportunity to discuss these and to see what they are and what they ought to do about it. That's probably a unique factor in CTE. And use the word unique in, I think, generic sense. It's very much more difficult for that to happen in other forms of education, at least routinely. Now, obviously, many people have a very good awareness of who they are without CPE or anything like that. There are some institutional chaplains who are crackerjacks, don't know what CPE means, although 9/10 of all institutional chaplains nowadays have CPE. I'm not trying to say in any sense the word that if you don't have it, you can't acquire these skills, but I am saying that this is one way by which this can happen, and many, many seminarians have discovered this to be the case. Let's pause for a moment for comments or questions before I go to a different area. What's that time now, is it?
Oh,
all right. Yeah, I don't know how to sweat time like
long.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you mentioned before about CTE in a parish setting.
Yeah.
And I was wondering how this differs from a bigger church.
Yeah. Well, the difference is in the one area that it's a more intense 12-week experience with a group setting, and all the ingredients I just mentioned. usually in a parish setting, there'll be some institution on the general hospital also needs to give some expertise in visiting. So this can come some flavor in that regard too. But the time difference is that if it's a group that meets together using the parish as a clinical setting rather than an institution.
Yeah, it has
to be, and he's usually a pastor on the staff of the parish.
Okay.
I myself think that for parish bound people, this is a natural, and we've been pushing this in our department. Some of the problems that exist are in the area, it can't be too small or too large a parish. It's too small, it's not enough clinical material. It's too large, some of the pastors on the staff find themselves so busy, it's hard to give enough time to the CPE. For instance, if it's been a senior pastor in a large parish, he often gets so involved in administrative and other matters that he is not able to give the time that he should. We've had a few cases where if it's been an assistant associate pastor, this has caused some kind of friction between junior pastors and senior pastors. It takes a little bit of money, not too much, but some parishes have found that to be a stumbling block. The long and the short of it is that while it seems like an ideal setting, it in practice it just hasn't worked out. If any of you are interested in CPE for the summer, you really ought to get going as quickly as you can, and I would say that you ought to make an impression of Professor Warnick very soon, and try to get down to some nitty gritty with him. I'll be around all afternoon here, would be happy to talk to anybody in terms of more specifics if this would be helpful. I mention this because a high percentage of seminaries now require CPE, so that literally thousands of seminary students are in summer programs because this is often the only time they can take CPE. This seminary in Springfield for years have allowed CPE in a quarter other than the summer as a possibility. Is this still true?
Yes.
And this I really like, because there are some centers that can never take all they want in the summer but have a hard time getting the group together during certain other times in the year. And thus, if you can work that into your schedule, it's worth looking into. Very often for the summer quarters, programs are beginning to be filled by November, December. I don't want to be pessimistic because sometimes vacancies occur, people drop out at the last minute, even come and get in April or May. But programs tend to fill up by about this time for the summer. So if anybody here is thinking of the summer, don't delay. Catholic priests and nuns are the latest group jumping on the CPE bandwagon, and literally about 100 there in terms of goals this summer. And for that reason, also, there are others behind the year too, but also in the summer, and for that reason, spaces are tighter and tighter as time goes on. Very often, if you're single, you can get room and board in a CPE program. Married students rarely have that opportunity, and rooms are decreasing. I noticed that lesser and lesser institutions have rooms, but quite a few still do. In most places, meals are possible. By and large, you pay a tuition of $200 per unit of CPE. And that's the only fee that you pay. In certain cases, part of all the fees are refunded, and there are very few centers that even offer a stipend for a student who is in summer quarter or in any individual quarter, but they're quite few in number. If you should latch on to one of those, you can make money. One of the problems that faces students in seminaries, whether they require it or not, is that many seminarians count on working in a summer and helping themselves get to school. And
they resist very strongly the necessity or even desirability of going to CPE, where not only are they not earning money, but they also are shelled out money. Now, that's one reason why, if you can take it during some quarter other than the summer, I think it's to your advantage, and you can also work. I think another possibility is to latch on to your vicarage, either before or after, if that's possible. Very often, for instance, you can find a center close to where you're vicaring, and say your vicarage, are they all a year in the vicarage?
Yes,
are they all 12 months of the year? Well, even
that's a very general rule.
Yeah. Well, if you were to vicar, say, from June to June, this would give you a summer.
Either September.
Usually, summer on either end is possible, and that's another option. There's a lot of arguments about when is the best time to take CPE. One school of thought says that you ought to take it after your first year, because then you can begin to integrate what you've seen and discovered and learned in the clinical setting with your theology as you learn it during the last 2 years of seminary and the vicarage. Some chaplain supervisors, however, and I've heard this more and more, say that since the student essentially is also seen as a chaplain in part of the institution where he works, that they've been appalled by the fact that many students after the first year aren't able to function well as chaplains, and they want people who have more time in seminary. Now, I don't know, this may vary from seminary to seminary, but this is one thing the students like to say. For people who are fourth-year students, if any of you are, but even if you aren't, and if you want to look way ahead to continuing education, there is a chance to take CPE in a little different way that you might want to think of. One of my personal feelings is that our pastors, by and large, do not avail themselves of continuing education opportunities after they graduate from seminary. I'm pretty convinced of that. I'm appalled by it, actually. Now, it's tragic, particularly since there are so many branches of state colleges and universities all around the state, so that, and the highways and what do you call these? Go from state to state, you know, they can't think of the word. But it's not like it was 50 years ago when you couldn't drive very easily into other communities.
The opportunities for continuing education in any area are immense. Also in CPE, and they call it extended CPE, which simply means CPE on a part-time basis. Everything is the same with a few real interesting differences. There must be a group, there must be a chaplain supervisor, but the group and the supervisor can arrange for hours that will suit both the group and the supervisor. You need to get 400 hours in. So very often, this can be done, say, from October through May. And the nicest thing that is rather new is that usually the clinical setting can be the parish where the pastor is working. So that he brings to the group and to the supervisor examples from his own parish in visiting the sick and in counseling to be looked at, studied, critiqued, investigated, instead of examples from the institution. I myself think that for parish pastors, this is a real natural. Very few clergy and parishes can take 3 months off and get full-time super CPEN. It's impossible. Furthermore, to do it from their own parish as the center, is ideal. And there's something to be said for the time between the sessions. as you think about what was went on in the group and how your verbatim was received or wasn't received, as you think about this as you're going about doing your parish work, it has a certain advantage, I think. Now, having said that, I still think that probably for seminarians, the more traditional CPE is preferable. My associate and I visit the fourth-year students in the Lutheran Seminary who have not only CPE required, but all the seminaries especially, to get their reaction to CPE, which often they've had 2 or 3 years before, you know, to see what they think about it later on. How it can be improved? What changes can be made? And I've been bringing up the question about this extended part-time CPE as against the full-time. And probably 95% say that they feel that they were glad that they had the typical CPE and not the extended, because the advantages in this rather intense full-time exposure, as they thought, were greater than they thought the advantages would be if they would be on a part-time basis. But especially for parish clergy, this other is ideal. And the only thing you need to do when you get out into the parish is simply keep your eyes and ears open. And if you can locate a center anywhere near where you are, meet the supervisor, tell him of your interest. He will often have other pastors interested and may form a group, or you can get together with at least 3 people, 2 others plus yourself, and form a group and go to them and say, look, we'd like to take advantage of something and can work something out. Did I say anything further about training as over against education that answered your question?
Well, I think I see the answer coming out more and more.
Probably isn't really that clear, or maybe you can't pinpoint it.
It seems to be a combination of approaches, right? Learning,
yeah,
about doing and discussing,
yeah,
the actual experience and so forth. And as you say, reading and articles,
yeah,
reports, so it has to be a broader term than training.
Yeah, well, I think there's a broader term. For instance, if I visit a dying patient in the hospital, and out of this can very often come ways of making my ministry to that person more effective. How I use God's word, for instance. Well, that is theological education, really, isn't it? More than just training. Although you're also doing the latter. I guess it's something I wouldn't really want to spend too many hours arguing. But be that what it may, that is a certain amount of use now. Yeah.
I was going to ask, what are the homiletical benefits of CPD? I'm sure there are.
Yeah, probably in various areas. Now, most, probably all seminaries are doing things now that weren't done here when I was a seminarian. So that in some respects, CPE is not new and fresh like it was some years ago, because I suspect new videotapes and so forth. But one homiletical thing would deal then with how I come across, what kind of a way I present myself as an ambassador of Christ. Also, though, am I appropriate to my congregation? Let us say it's a mental hospital and I have old people on a ward who are getting somewhat female, so forth. Do I communicate well to them the gospel of Christ? And over again, to a different type of audience, say a teenager in a teenage unit, which would present a totally different type of congregation. By and large, CPE programs are mixed in that you have people from different denominations in a given program, and this is generally done for a reason. And so you would not find, for instance, the supervisor dealing with your content in terms of content as a Lutheran, although he may very well raise issues in terms of how you're presenting law and gospel and these things. And the other students might very well raise issues. I think that's a side benefit, by the way. For instance, I as a Lutheran believe in the Baptist. And I feel that there are passages in the Bible that give me a solid basis for this belief. But a person from a Southern Baptist seminary would have a quite different view, and I'm sure would have Bible passages that to him would say something quite different. Now, by and large, very often, at least my own experience as I grew up, was that I was going to school with and dealing with Lutheran crusades, just about, that's all. I never had the experience, for instance, when I was younger, being in CPE, and really having to tell somebody else why I believed a certain thing, and seeing if they accepted this or if not. I think this can be a very stimulating kind of thing. I was 4 years in the parish when I took my first CPE, and but my own feeling is that this could be an exciting challenge. It's a way of testing. Essentially, you do not find in CPE hard-nosed people trying to ram something down your throat, but you do find people from different backgrounds who will want you to demonstrate that what is dear and near to you is something that, well, at least they want to hear about it. They may or may not agree with it. It may or may not be reasonable for them. That's an added dimension there. Yeah.
Is there that conflict or disagreement, let's say, as far as the methodology is concerned, if it's actual critical work, let's say, as far as because of the fact that there are so many different things, if there's not many different things, you have a very heterogeneous group that you're working with.
Yeah.
Is there going to be at times difficulty in part of the education process?
Yeah.
How does it all turn out in the end?
Well, I guess it varies somewhat. It's really hard to give an answer that covers everything. We deal literally with hundreds of Lutherans, for instance, in seminaries and have CPE, and are on the campuses periodically, and I have not seen anything destructive or something that, you know, makes me angry or gets me all riled up. There are some people, I don't know, it's hard to use examples, but some High Church Episcopalians I find are really set in certain ways, and they're not the same from how I was. That's just one thing off the top of my head. And I think very often you might come with a certain stance and leave with the same stance, and somebody else may be down that might be different. But to give you a homiletical example again, I have students, for instance, who bring to even preach what they thought was the gospel in such an angry, law-oriented way. You know, that this question would be raised, and what is it? You know? Now, that's a homiletical, that's a theological issue.
And then he's partly pulled into the man calling him his other.
Oh, indeed. Yeah. And his background, there's so many things that can cause that. Some people preach the gospel, but angry at the tone. Just the way they talk. And they're unaware of it, maybe. And possibly, if they sit down and think about this, it may not really take any major changes in terms of how they are speaking, or but it's something that possibly has never been pointed out. And if they didn't have the opportunity like this, or having the opportunity, it can affect their ministry so badly. I don't want to really answer this question, do
I? I think that maybe,
there's another thing I guess I gotta say, and that is that I could talk and we could talk for hours about CPE, but there's a certain experiential aspect of it that really doesn't come across unless you're involved in it. And I don't know what your stereotypes are, if any, your fantasy about CPE, but CPE supervisors essentially are pastoral people. If it's not a Lutheran, you will probably not
do anything at all to attempt to change it theologically. In my own particular training and student I had, I did not have really one person who I thought had any stance at all like I had in terms of historical Christian faith. I had a very liberal Methodist, and a UCC person who was more of a Unitarian, and a High Church Episcopalian, and another liberal Methodist, in a series of supervisors. But I really cannot point to any way in which I felt put down or they attempted to influence my theology. Now, there are so many Lutheran supervisors that it should be a concern to anybody. It's no threat to get into a program. And in some respects, it's good because, after all, if it is theological education, probably a Lutheran supervisor would make an effect. And yet, if for any reason you're interested in a program where there's no Lutheran around, I hope you won't be frightened, because I think it could be a stimulating challenge thing. In any case, did I see you raising your hand?
Yeah. Is there any center around here?
Are there any around here? Yeah, there's one in St. Louis State Hospital. There's a center in Bryan, but did I hear that Davis is reading the list? Yeah, I think he did. Pretty sure. I think he's a Methodist. He went down to some southern area. Interesting sort of a job. Methodist bishop, which is like the district president, to be a pastor to pastors as an assistant to the bishop. That's one area that is fascinating that I would like to see develop more in our church. I mean, the DP, by and large, by nature of his job, probably is primarily a minister. And sometimes it's hard to be both that and pastor to pastor. But that's another thing. Deaconess, yeah.
Not one that you emphasize.
I sent such a warning that was last year missing. There was a day when I knew almost every supervisor and could say I would suggest this person and that person I'd watch out for, and this person is good for certain for the students. By the way, this is generally one of the reasons for the admission interview too. Some supervisors are really good for certain kinds of students and probably not for others. But the problem I'm finding now more and more is that there's so many young supervisors that I don't even know. And it's hard sometimes to really assess them. Now, having said that, I'm not sure. I just don't know. There's a few supervisors who I would say I would not go there. But probably there's a lot of people I don't know who would be good supervisors, and I just don't know. President Warnick has a list of centers and which is 1975 and could be of help to you in terms of Ferris right now if Ferris is my phone.
We in pastoral theology have units on the people in crisis situations to fix. And one of the things we emphasize here is that the pastor attempts to have a prophetic ministry. But this is not to ignore the help of the psychology and keeping our antennae up, you know, to know the patient, to minister to them, and so on. All the things that CPA trains a scholar to be aware of. But I would say we are concerned somewhat from our kind of posture here that a scholar learns to, as you said a moment ago, to use the Word of God, to use our Scripture, not in the sense of a little pill given out, but in a way that does really draw the patient with the whole theological framework of his particular situation under a good and gracious God.
Yeah,
that kind of emphasis, I think, we right. At the seminar, an institution we've been looking for in supervision of CPA.
Right, you remind me of something that I didn't say that fits in right with what you said. A value of CPE is to see how you are as a pastor to patients
with whom you will have a number of consecutive visits. As I said before, you are a pastor, a chaplain to either a ward or a section of the hospital or unit or whatever it's called. And if you are visiting Mrs. Smith, who is in bed, say, with a heart condition, 5 or 6 times, the supervisor will be looking carefully at your work as a pastor and how you are being a pastor to her over a series of visits. That's an immense value. He said that if I go into a person I don't know at all, for instance, and my second sentence is, I would say it's probably too crass, but you can deal prematurely. You can turn a person off and you'll never get together again with them. But if, on the other hand, after 2 or 3 visits, you aren't really getting down to spiritual matters, but you will say, well, what gives you? You're a future clergyman, you're the chaplain to this person. Why aren't you using the resources that you have? And that's the beauty of writing verbatim on a person with whom you visit for a number of times. You see just how you can deal with them and their pastor in terms of where they are at the time of the visit.
Well, we're approaching the noon hour, gentlemen. Dr. Duffer will be here